Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a four-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right, you heard me right, 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. Hello, America, and happy Labor Day, this Monday of the 2020 year, as we reflect back on the great summer we just had, and we look forward to the fall. We've got a big few weeks coming up, the 20th anniversary of 9/11 this week. We must never forget the fallen from that day. And of course, the beginning of election season. There's an election in Virginia this year that's very consequential. The recall election with Gavin Newsom in California is worth keeping an eye on. All of these things are in motion. And when we come out of this holiday, we've got a lot to grapple with, a lot to work on, a lot to consider. But before we do, I thought we'd just do something special for today. I was privileged last Thursday night to host a national TV special, a conversation about critical race theory in America's school system. Dr. Ben Carson joined me. Congressman Dan Bishop joined me. Two amazing parents, one in Rhode Island, one in Indiana, who are on the front lines of this fight in addressing it with their school district, their school administrators, their principals. They're joining me. They have some pretty amazing tales of what it was like to be a parent and find out what your children was learning that you didn't want them to be taught, because it seems to be more about indoctrination than information and education. So they're on here. We've got Jessica Anderson, my good friend from Heritage Action for America. She's on here. It is a really, really great conversation we had. And so today, I thought, for Labor Day, to give you some food for thought, since the kids are going back to school, the grandkids, whoever they are, that we would play that show for you in an audio format. It is some really fascinating information. I hope you enjoy it. A special edition of John Solomon Reports this holiday, this Labor Day, coming up right after the commercial break. Folks, eat stress-free this spring. How? With Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. That's great for a busy person like me. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your Springtown goals. Why do I use Factor Meals? Well, it's real simple. I'm busy, but I want to eat healthy. And if it only takes you 2 minutes, I'm all in on healthy eating. And the best part is that Factor Meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. All you got to do is simply heat and savor the good stuff. Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. I love asparagus. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50 and use the code justnews50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That code, one more time, is justnews50 at factormeals.com/justnews50. What are you going to do? You're going to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. That's a great deal. One more time. Head to factormeals.com/justnews50. Use the promo code justnews50 for half off your first order.
tonight, we have a star-studded cast joining us to help us learn what is going on at the federal, state, and local level to address the concerns about critical race theory. And we start off here in Washington with Congressman Dan Bishop of the great state of North Carolina. Congressman Bishop, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Great to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
It's an honor to have you on, sir. You've been right smack dab in the middle of one of the biggest CRT fights yet in Washington, pressing legislations to things like the National Defense Authorization Act to ban critical race theory in our military and across our government. Tell us what's been started and how your colleagues in Congress have been reacting so far.
So, John, I think we have what's best described as a great case of building momentum, and it's very encouraging to me in so many ways. Early in the year, there were some who didn't think Republicans should take up the issue of critical race theory, but I knew it was at the heart of what we need to take up. It's imperative. This is a dangerous, poisonous, racist ideology that has no place in any institution in the United States, certainly not the federal government. So as some were advising to stay away from it, we ran to the issue, following the lead of people like Chris Rufo and James Lindsay and others. We got together with Russ Vogt, who had been President Trump's Director of Office of Management and Budget and had been responsible for guiding President Trump's executive order through on the issue of critical race theory in the federal government. And my office introduced two bills, and we've got well over 60 or 70 Republican co-sponsors at this point in time. One bill was a companion to Senator Tom Cotton's bill in the Senate that separates the subject matter of critical race theory in the military and absolutely bans it. And then we also filed a bill that would codify President Trump's executive order, which, of course, Biden withdrew,
which
would ban the use of critical race theory in the conduct of the operations and activities of agencies of the federal government. And also, going beyond that, would prohibit the use of federal funds to sponsor or support or advance the cause of critical race theory anywhere in any of the activities or programs that the federal government funds.
Wow, those are important moments, and I know a lot of people are talking about it. Now, I've seen you tweet and talk about how you wish the military had spent a little more time planning for the Afghan war exit, maybe a little less time on social engineering. Do you think there's a growing concern in Congress that the military has had its focus on things other than fighting and winning wars?
You know, John, I think there is a general proposition here, and then I'm going to focus on the military. I think every institution that is being infused with critical race theory, it does damage in all kinds of ways, not only in the sort of rotting effect, the caustic undermining of relationships that critical race theory itself promotes, but it's a distraction. And you see this particularly, I think, and it's not just a one-off or kind of sarcastic comment.
Right.
The United States military is responsible to defend this country. That's its mission. It requires an esprit de corps, force cohesiveness. And the notion that you know, the senior members, that General Milley sits in the congressional hearing and kind of contemptuously says to members of Congress that he's interested in understanding white rage, he should be fired for that kind of notion. That is abhorrent in the United States government generally. And you look at what happened just now in Afghanistan, and you can see every indication that our military leadership and even civilian leadership and President Biden are distracted from the mission of the United States military.
Yeah, such an important thing to be keeping an eye on. Now, you've got this legislation started both in the Senate and the House. Where do we go next from here? How do you get CRT out of our military and the government for good?
I think the answer, John, is that we've got to keep pressing on every front. And I don't have any illusions. We're in the minority in the United States House of Representatives. Nancy Pelosi is not going to call my bill up and ram it through on the floor like she does her $3.5 trillion budget resolution.
Right.
And so I don't think the path forward is going to be simple or quick. But what I am encouraged about is that the efforts on CRT are by no means limited to Washington. So just last evening, the North Carolina General Assembly, the House, after the Senate had passed has passed legislation. Many states have done so. And it's a very well-balanced and finely tuned piece of legislation, which gets right at some of the things. You know, you hear people say, critics would say, well, first of all, critical race theory is not a thing, or it's not being taught in schools, or not being practiced or promoted in schools. And then they gave that up. And then they'd say, well, yeah, but you don't want to teach accurate history and the flaws of American the treatment of people on racial grounds. That's also false. And that bill, I'm proud to say, does a fantastic job of articulating that and narrowing, being very precise about what the horrendous and counterproductive, dangerous ideology is that is critical race theory as distinct from teaching history. So that bill came forward. But, you know, what most thrills me, John, is to see moms and dads in school board meetings across this country hammering officials that have found their way to getting their institutions off track in the same way General Milley's gotten the military off track. It's going to take a persistent effort in which we press on all fronts. And I'm just pleased to see. I think it's in a political picture right now in America in which people worry about a lot of things. This is a bright spot. We're moving the needle on this horrible critical race theory.
Yeah, such a good point. We got about a minute and a half left, and I want to ask, we've got a big election coming up next year that's going to decide who's in control of Congress for the next 2 years. And you've got this incredible momentum. You've got parents at the grassroots level now running for school board, taking ownership of their own local politics. And you've got the nation as a whole trending towards the Republican Party, the generic ballot, 2 to 4 points in favor of Republicans for the first time in several years. How will this issue of critical race theory play out in next year's election?
Well, I think it's part of the momentum that we need, John. I'm a member of Congress, fairly new member of Congress. I'm a person who believes there's a lot of times people look at the Republican Party and what we're doing in Congress, and they feel like we're almost sleepwalking, like we're not. We have no idea what the people out there in the public are thinking, and that we're not bold enough to make substantial change in the right direction. Well, that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's in the past. We need to be about making the change that an ultra-majority, silent ultra-majority, sometimes frustrated ultra-majority of Americans want made. And this is the way you build momentum, is you show commitment. It requires a little bit of courage, and you demonstrate some courage, and people will follow. And so that's as far as I'm concerned, it's not going to be on this issue. I'm never backing up on this, and I'm not going to sit back and be passive and sleepwalk through on a whole host of issues that we need to change in this country.
Yeah, that's it. Well, from great courage comes great action. We know that in our country's great history. Congressman, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciated it.
Thank you, John. And let me say how great an example you are. God bless.
Thank you. God bless you too, sir. Folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, Jessica Anderson from Heritage Action will be joining us for a survey of our flyover country. What's going on in the real states? You won't want to miss it.
Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000, or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews.
Welcome back to our Just the News, Real America Voice special on the efforts to fight critical race theory in America's schools. Now, there's enormous concern in Washington about the extremist curricula seeping into our schools, but the most impactful efforts so far have mostly occurred at the state and local grassroots level. That's where legislation, executive orders, and school board protests have already brought about change. Joining us now is Jessica Anderson, Executive Director for Heritage Action for America, the sponsor for our show, to tell us how grassroots organizing is making a difference. Jessica, welcome to tonight's show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
It's an honor to have you. There seems to have been three key successes in the fight against CRT: state legislatures, gubernatorial executive orders, and school board activism. I want to tackle all three. Let's start with the first battlefield, legislatures. What's been going on in state houses across the country, Jessica?
Well, it's been absolutely incredible to see so many state legislators take this issue really by the horns and be very aggressive in their legislative session to introduce bills, or in a lot of cases, like over nine states, not only introduce them, but then send them all the way to the governor for the governor to then sign. And these bills at the state level look specifically at critical race theory. They reject it in their school boards, reject it in the curriculum at the state level. And it allows and empowers the parents who have been standing up against CRT to feel heard. And so you have someone like Governor DeSantis, who's been incredibly forward-looking in this, that he did a flat-out ban in the state of Florida against CRT. And so I think all of these governors, these state legislators that have passed these bills, should be commended. And it's one critical part of this larger effort to take this down.
Yeah, and some of those governors have actually used executive orders when there hasn't yet been legislation. Sometimes the legislatures aren't in session, and so the governors have used that executive power as well. How is that being viewed in the everyday America, you know, where parents are worried about what their children are about to be taught as they go back to school this fall?
Well, parents have really been the ones, I think, that have led this entire effort, because they're the ones that are showing up at school board meetings. They're showing up at parent-teacher conferences to talk out against this. And so when that sort of grassroots element rises up from the bottom up and actually finds its way to a governor's ear or the governor's staff, and they issue an executive order, you know then that the grassroots is working, and that leadership in the state level is in tune with what the voters and the citizens of that state want to see. So for the most part, what I'm hearing is that people welcome governors that are doing the executive orders if they don't have that partnership with the state legislature. But the more we can drive this effort towards a legislative fix and actually have this be codified in law, the better off we're going to be in the long term to root out critical race theory from our schools, from our American institutions. And Heritage Action, we have some model legislation available to state legislators all across the country. We have some polling and focus groups results, all of which people are able to take a look at, apply to their state, and get this passed. And especially as we go into January with new legislative sessions, I think this is going to be a top priority for legislators.
Yeah, and it's important to remember that it was Heritage Action's early roadmap of legislation for election integrity reform that many states modeled their legislation on early this year. So check out that the new legislation ideas. They're very important, folks. All right, now we if the governors get the ball rolling and the legislatures make it permanent through the law, the third front seems to be the school board, where parents are showing up in droves at meetings, running for school board in ways that we haven't seen, having recalls launched. Tell us a little bit more about what the grassroots are doing at the school board level and what impact that might have long term.
Well, all the action around combating critical race theory is really at the school board level. And you have seen more and more parents that have never even been involved in political issues before. They've realized what's being taught to their children. They don't like it. They want to make sure that they have a seat at the table. And that, so they're going to the mic. They're showing up at these school board meetings. They're driving recalls like what we saw in Wisconsin and Arizona and Georgia and Florida. They're pushing back against these very antagonistic and divisive school board mantras that would keep our children locked into this racist point of view through critical race theory. And so parents like what we saw in Loudoun County, we just did this huge event in Delaware last week. There were over 500 incredibly frustrated parents that are standing up and saying, enough is enough. You will not continue to indoctrinate my child. And they're demanding a change. And what's been really cool to see, John, is that not only is this movement bringing out new parents into the fight, but they're actually finding partners with teachers that are actually willing themselves to lay their job on the line and stand up against critical race theory. We even saw this happen this last week where a teacher in Virginia went in and actually resigned because she was so upset of how critical race theory was being taught. And though, so this is new for the conservative movement. I'm excited by it. I'm energized by it because it's a very real and it's a permanent way that we can fight back against critical race theory taking its root in our schools.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the media coverage has sort of set this up to look like it's a right versus left debate or a black versus white debate. But in fact, there's very large support, or I should say opposition to critical race theory and other curricula like it on all parts of the agenda, right? It isn't really a political issue because it cuts across many different divides. How is that altering the dynamic a little bit?
Well, you're exactly right. This is not just an issue between white and black. This is not an issue between those that are in public school versus private school, because critical race theory, as it's best defined and understood, it is a worldview. It is a lens by which everything in the country is pitted against two races, and that intercedes and intercepts not only schools, but other American institutions. It's in the military, as we've seen the last few weeks, and it's in federal agencies. And so because everyone is recognizing this and standing up and standing back against this, you're actually seeing the inflection point to be larger than just one group of people in the country, because they're trying to fight it at all of these different levels, whether it's schools, military, federal agencies, or our American institutions in general.
Yeah, such a great point. Now, you guys recently launched a new website, saveourschools.com. How can parents who are worried about what's being taught to their children use that site and other things to monitor lessons and take action to change the curriculum their students are facing?
Absolutely. So saveourschools.com is a one-stop shop for anyone that is interested in fighting back against critical race theory. Whether you want instructions on how to submit a FOIA request to get those emails and behind the scenes information that may have been happening in a school board meeting or with a superintendent, we'll walk you through how to do a FOIA request. If you're interested in working with your state legislature to introduce new legislation in your state's capital in January when the new sessions start, we've got up to date model legislation people can use. If you want the latest polling and focus group information about how to talk about these issues, whether you're in a community in a suburban area or you're in an African-American community, wherever you are, this is an issue to talk about because it permeates all aspects of American society. So you can text CRT to 51776 or check us out online at saveourschools.com. We also have the list of all the federal bills that are moving through Congress that touch on all of these different issues of where CRT is involved in our country and how you can support those bills. Hopefully we're gonna see one move through the NDAA markup just this week in the House of Congress.
That's one we're gonna have to be watching, Jessica. Hey, thanks for the great report on what's going on in the grassroots trenches of America. Very exciting time.
Thanks for having me, John.
My pleasure. Folks, we're gonna take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Jonathan Butcher, a nationally renowned expert on education and free speech, and a fellow at both the Goldwater Institute and the Heritage Foundation, right after these messages.
Hey folks, if you're a homeowner and you're like me, you want to protect your home, right? But when's the last time you checked on the title to your home? If you never have, listen to this. A new report on homeowners shows we all now have $16 trillion in equity. That's an all-time high in America. That's why you need protection from a scam the FBI calls house stealing. That's when the equity in all of our homes is the target, sadly, of scammers. If nobody's watching the title to your home, these scammers can transfer your title to their name, take out loans, and your equity could be gone. Poof, gone. You have to protect your equity from this despicable crime right now with triple lock protection from my good friends at HomeTitleLock.com. The first step is to check on your home's title to see if it's still in your name. Sign up with your address at HomeTitleLock.com and be sure to use the promo code JUSTNEWS. They're going to send you a complete title scan of your home's title and your first 30 days of triple lock home title protection. That's legendary protection, by the way. It's free. HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code JUSTNEWS. One more time, go to HomeTitleLock.com today and protect your most important asset, the equity in your home.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. Joining me now is Jonathan Butcher. He is a nationally renowned expert on curriculum and free speech in the education system, a senior fellow at the Goldwater Institute, a fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he's currently writing a book on critical race theory in America. Jonathan, great to have you on the show.
Great to be with you.
I'd like to wind back. We've been having a fun discussion today. I want to wind back and just help people understand, what is critical race theory? Where did it get its origins?
That's a great question. Critical race theory indisputably has Marxist roots. It came from the study of critical legal theory, which was popular in law schools and originated in really about the 1970s. And then on top of that, or before that, came critical theory, which originated in Germany in between the two world wars. Critical theory was a new perspective on Marxism. It was meant to decide what Marxists should do now after the success of revolutionaries in what became the Soviet Union, the failure of the same type of revolution in Germany. And it was coupled with this idea of a Freudian postmodernism. And that's a fancy way of saying that they took Marxist ideas and met it with this concept that there is no authentic truth, that there is no objective reality on which we can base the decisions we make for the future. So critical race theory, what we have today, originated in the late 1980s and built on top of all of these things that I just described for you there. So you have Marxist elements, clear Marxist roots. You have an attack on this concept of authentic truth, mixed all together with the idea that everything in life, business, government, must be seen through the lens of racial identities.
Wow. And it almost feels like a throwback, right? An era when we used to consider race before anything else. Now, it starts in the intelligentsia. It starts in this Marxist philosophical word. How does it morph and eventually get into the K-12 education system?
So after the critical theorists, the original critical theorists from the 1920s, they were chased out of Germany by the Nazis, and they came to Columbia University in near the end of the 1930s. From there, they influenced generations of professors and students in law schools in particular, and that's how we arrived at critical legal theory. With critical legal theory, they argued that American law is systemically oppressive. So our rule of law is meant to be, is designed to oppress people. Then from there, in the late 1980s, you have individuals like Richard Delgado and Derek Bell, Patricia Williams, Angela Harris, and others who said that critical legal theory didn't go far enough. It's not just about law. It's also about culture. It's also about describing all of the systems in American life as systems that are meant to oppress ethnic minorities. And so it arrived in schools as the ideas from critical race theory began to be used in colleges of education. And so you have a wide range of writings in colleges of ed, so where teachers are trained, that deals with oppression and that talks about critical race theory as the way to describe society in the United States in the 1990s and going into the 2000s. So as you have legal scholars who then say it's not just enough to change law schools, they move into colleges of education in particular, and they begin to change what teachers are then imparting to students.
Wow, remarkable. How important a moment was the 1619 Project in catapulting critical race theory into a more popular discussion, into school boards, into school administrators' back doors?
Critical race theory was already in schools by the time the 1619 Project arrived. I think the 1619 Project is more a sign of the times. It is evidence that those in the mainstream media are ready to use, frankly, racially discriminatory ideas to describe American history and say that the only way that we can define America's past is through the lens of slavery and racial oppression. And that is what the 1619 Project aims to do. In fact, their byline, I mean, one of the subtitles of the lead essay is that they want to reframe a discussion of America's past, making racism and slavery central to that discussion. Yeah. And look, No one denies, okay, that there were times in America's past where we did not live up to our promise of freedom and opportunity to all, right? Slavery is a stain on America's past. The Jim Crow era is something that Americans today should say, should condemn, and should say should never have been a part of our lives. But much has changed in the last 60 years. To say that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is not valuable, or to say that the civil rights movement, didn't do enough to change perspectives, it casts a pall on those who sacrificed for the civil rights era and in the civil rights movement, right? Those who went to prison, to protest for equality under the law.
Yeah, such a great point to make that this theory essentially doesn't pay credit to all the gains that the civil rights leaders in the 1950s and 60s made for this country. I want to pivot for a second to the question, because I hear this a lot from parents and now some teachers who are speaking up, that the goal of the education system is to teach children how to think, and that critical race theory is basically an effort to tell children what to think. As an academic, what do you see in that debate? Is this an evolution of education from giving people the learning skills to giving people indoctrination?
So there's always been tension over curriculum in public schools. Public schools have this unique place where they're situated in between public policy and culture. It's where sort of government and your everyday life meets. You have schools that are funded with tax dollars. We all pay for them. And you have this training, this effort to develop students into be participating members of civil society later. And so there's always been this tension in this debate. What critical race theory has ushered in the last 30 years in particular is a reconsideration of racial discrimination and the use of racial discrimination, both in instruction and in everyday life. And I don't think there's anything that that recognizes this more or is symbolic of this more than the writings of Ibram Kendi, who now, famously in his book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, said the only way to prevent future discrimination is with present discrimination. And so that's where we see these K-12 activities of mandatory affinity groups, where students and teachers are separated according to skin color for different school projects, or where you have whiteness studies or white privilege lessons, where students are instructed that because of the color of their skin, they are either privileged or automatically advantaged, or will have some irrefutable benefit in life. And conversely, those that have a different color of their skin will always be oppressed or will always have to fight against something in society in order to be successful. Those sorts of discriminatory ideas, that is what critical race theory is bringing into classrooms today.
Wow. And you can understand why there's such a dialogue and debate about it. We got about a little over a minute left. What is the future of this debate? Where does this get settled? Is it at the school board level? Is it at Congress? Is it at the state level? How will this play out, and how will America ultimately resolve whether CRT stays or leaves our schools?
Well, I think there are three places where this battle is ongoing right now. So the first is in the courtroom. There are several lawsuits where teachers and in some cases parents have said that their child or that in their workplace, they were asked to affirm or profess or believe a racially discriminatory idea. And they're charging that the use and application of critical race theory in the classroom is causing, as has forced them or tried to force them, to be racially prejudiced. So there are ongoing court cases about that now. Second is at the school board level, like you mentioned. Parents are standing up and speaking out and saying that what their children are being asked to do, what they are asked to apply in the classroom, are ideas that are racially biased, and they want nothing of it. And so we're going to see more and more of this in school boards around the country as school boards learn to recognize these discriminatory elements of critical race theory. And then there is the federal government. The Biden administration has expressed support for critical ideas. Right. And so we're going to see parents and taxpayers need to push back, especially at the state level, against the use of discrimination in classrooms.
Wow. From Washington to the school boards. What an amazing moment in American history. Jonathan, thank you so much for giving us a good lesson on that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, two parents who are right on the front lines of battling critical race theory in their own school systems before their own school boards. Right after this commercial break.
Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guaranteed. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off.
All right, folks. Welcome back to our Just the News, Real America's Voice special. Freeing classrooms from ideology, the fight against critical race theory. Now, we've heard a lot of what's happening in Washington, what's happening in the states, and now we're going to hear from parents who are taking on critical race theory at the local school level. Joining us now are Nicole Solis, a Rhode Island mom, who is being sued by the nation's largest teachers union because she tried to find out what her child was learning at school. And Alvin Liu, a parent who moved his family from California to the Midwest in hopes of escaping critical race theory, only to find it was in Indiana too. Both of you, I really want to welcome you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Nicole, let me start with you. Your efforts have captured the eyes of the nation. You know, you tried to just find out what your child was learning at school, and all of a sudden you find yourself being sued for that. Tell us what drove your concerns about what was being taught at school and why the National Education Association local affiliates tried to sue you.
Well, a year or two ago, my school pledged allegiance to Black Lives Matter. They used all the code words like ridding the school of systemic inequities. They said the school was systemically racist. And when I enrolled my daughter in kindergarten, I decided to see if they really followed through with all of these promises they made with this ideology. I talked to the principal, who said that they do teach concepts of critical race theory and gender theory. They don't call the kids boys and girls. They refrain from using gender terminology. They embed the values of gender identity in the classroom. And with critical race theory, they ask five-year-olds what could have been done differently at Thanksgiving. And then they said that they have a certain line of thinking about history that they teach kids at an age-appropriate level in every grade. When I asked more questions about what exactly they're teaching them, they told me to submit public records requests because they didn't want to answer my questions directly. When I submitted a lot of public records requests to get my questions answered, they then turned around and threatened to sue me. They ultimately decided not to sue me, but now the NEA, the National Education Association, is suing me to prevent the disclosure of that information from my public records request. And they're claiming that if this information comes out, their teachers will be vulnerable to harassment, which is ridiculous. No one wants anybody to be harassed, but we know that critical race theory is in public school, and it should be disclosed so that people can participate in robust public debate about the value of this in public school. But the teachers union is now suing me to try to prevent all of that from happening.
Really remarkable. Schools that are paid with tax dollars, teachers on the, you know, taxpayers' dime, and they don't want to share what they're teaching your children. Pretty remarkable story. Alvin, I want to turn to you because you uprooted your family from California. You took them to Indiana. And in right. hopes of finding a more moderate a school curriculum. What shocked you when you got to Indiana?
Well, when I first started seeing some of the seeds being planted, it was things that we would recognize that a lot of people here wouldn't, just because we kind of lived through the end of it. And so, you know, the question was, well, do we want to fight it here again? Because when California, when by the time we realized it, we couldn't do anything about it.
Right.
We were like 25 years too late, 20 years too late by the time we realized it, because we were the first of its kind. But here in Indiana, there's still a window. And I know for people here, it's really overwhelming because this is the first time they've experienced this kind of all-out attack, especially at the school level. And when it happens really quick, because they have all these different things, all these different programs and things in place for the last 5 to 7 years, and nobody noticed them. So when they pull all these levers, it feels very sudden for a lot of parents. But there's still a great window here that parents can fight. It's just that the window closes really, really quick, because once they start indoctrinating the schools at this level, it goes really, really fast.
It does. Now, you've gotten involved, Alvin, in a group called Unify Carmel. Describe what why'd you become active and what that group is doing and what other parents could learn from it?
Sure. The reason why, I mean, there was a point of not doing anything because we moved here not to do this, you know, but I guess the question for us was, well, where's my daughter going to go? Where's my kids going to go kind of thing, right? Once the Midwest goes, that's it. Because nobody's escaping from a boat from the U.S. to Cuba, right? And so Unify Carmel is just a parent-led group. It's a grassroots parent-led, grandparents-led group. And it's just parents and grandparents who wants to see the schools just go back to focusing on high rigor academics. Where we're from in Carmel here in Indiana, it's one of the best school system in the country. One of the best in the country. And so they got there because of the focus on high rigor academics, because a good education helps everyone, especially if you're a minority. And so the last few years, they've really been turning towards that social justice, that diversity, inclusion, equity type of ideology, the CRT, the gender propaganda, all that stuff. And so we just really want all that to be left at home to the parents. We're not saying it's wrong or right. We're just saying you got to leave it to parents. Mm-hmm. But it's not right to have it for a captive audience, because there's children. They can't do anything about it. They can't go anywhere. And when you have these activist teachers that bring this stuff in, you're literally taking hostage, you know, a captive audience of children.
Yeah. I think both of you want your children to be taught how to think and how to learn, but not what to think. That's your job as parents. And it seems as though the schools are usurping that. Nicole, I want to go back to you because it's funny. I was in Connecticut and your name came up in Connecticut. You're a household name. People have really embraced the bravery that you've shown in this. Yeah. Tell us a little bit, Nicole, about what message you've taken away from the teachers' resistance to want to show parents what they're being taught to their children. What did you make of that when you saw that?
Well, I think that there's a logical disconnect here. Sometimes people are surprised to learn that as public employees, they are more accountable to the public than perhaps they thought, because maybe they're not really used to the public asking for that accountability. And I think that the more we have parents telling them that they have to tell us what they're doing, what they're teaching, we can maybe ease into a new paradigm where it's not scary when people ask what you're doing, because hopefully eventually you're not doing anything wrong or controversial. I also really like what Alvin said when, just to segue for a second, he said that he doesn't want to really focus on, you know, whether you like critical race theory or not. And I think that's really the heart of the matter, because public school is not the place for ideological teaching. You know, public school would become more like a church. And we already have separation of church and state. So I think if people focus less on what they think about critical race theory and just understand that it is a value system and a belief system that is subjective, maybe we can all agree that it just shouldn't be in public school. Maybe it can go somewhere else, like the home, but it can't be in public school.
Yeah, such an important point. And I've heard a lot of people say that this is the beginning of teaching a religion in schools. Now, we got about 2 minutes left. I want to address this last question to both of you. The media describes CRT often as a red versus blue political debate. But for both of you, this has been a very personal decision about your children. I just want to ask you, what as a parent concerns you about the CRT education and lessons? And what advice would you give other parents who share those concerns? Nicole, let's start with you.
Well, it's ideological. It's subjective. Personally, I believe it's dehumanizing and toxic and can lead to a very destructive, slippery slope. And parents need to know exactly what their kids are learning, because ultimately, I think it's going to separate children from their parents and separate children from their family and their family's values. And public school is not meant for that. So parents need to start submitting public records requests and start asking about what exactly the lessons are and the lesson materials and use all those code words, equity, systemic racism, racism. They want you to believe that it's either a blue or red issue, but it's not. If you're a parent, you are in charge of what your kids are learning, and it doesn't matter whether you're Democrat, Republican, liberal, or progressive. You're the one that raises your children with the values that you want, and that shouldn't be a partisan issue.
Yeah, such an important point. Alvin, how about you? What drove you to do this, and what advice do you have for other parents?
Well, a good education is good for everybody. A rising tide raises all ships. In the Asian culture, we believe in that one generation concept, and that no matter where your parents come from, they could just come with a shirt on their backs, but you're only one generation away from changing the bloodline, the destiny of your bloodline, just one generation. So we teach our children to look one generation ahead of why you can be successful. Critical race theory teaches you to look three generations behind as to why you can't. And wow, that's why we 100% disagree with that. And for parents, I would say, don't give labels power. The reason why we lost California is because we pretty much died in silence because they used the same tactic, the racist, the bigot, all those different things. But those words only have power if you give it to them. And those are the, I mean, I always say that parent can run into a burning building and save their kids, but one word, one label, they'll be quiet and not protect their kids. And I think that's silly. It doesn't matter what they call you. This is the hill worth dying on because you only get one shot at raising your kids. And if you don't protect them, they're going to raise them. And they're going to raise them under this ideology. You're never going to get them back.
Such an important point. Nicole, Alvin, thank you so much for joining us tonight and for sharing your insights. Folks, stick around. Dr. Ben Carson will be joining us next. We'll be right back after a quick commercial break.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. We wanted to close out tonight's program with a very special guest. For decades, he treated pediatric patients as a renowned neurosurgeon. He then moved into politics, ran for president in 2016, then became a cabinet secretary under President Donald Trump. And now, today, he is the founder of the American Cornerstone Institute, a new nonprofit. Joining us right now is Dr. Ben Carson. Ben, great to have you on the show, sir.
Thank you, John. Always good to be with you.
We've been talking this entire hour about critical race theory and what's been happening from the federal level all the way down to the school board. I've seen you talk about this, and you have a very specific take that this is a philosophy and education curriculum that robs young generations of their future. Could you describe a little bit what you mean by that?
Well, you know, we are taking children at the time when they're most impressionable, and do recognize that people have recognized for many, many centuries that children are very pliable and can be either taught the right things or the wrong things, but it sticks with them for life. You know, it was Vladimir Lenin who said, "Give me 4 years to teach your children, and the seeds that I have sown will never be uprooted." So they know what they're doing at an impressionable time when people are developing their self-image. We don't want that image to be one of, if you're a black kid or minority, that you're a victim, that somebody else is in control of your destiny. You know, as a youngster, you know, my mother made me read books because I was a terrible student before that. And I started reading about philosophers and explorers and entrepreneurs and surgeons. And I began to realize that the person who really had the most to do with what happened to me was me. It wasn't somebody else. It wasn't some environment. And over the course of that next year and a half, I went from the bottom of the class to the top of the class. I had a vision, and nobody was really going to stop me at that point. And I think we're robbing children of that kind of vision, the can-do attitude that established America as a great nation. And then if you're a young white kid, you know, you're being told that you're evil, that you're parents are evil, your grandparents, all your ancestors have been oppressors and created all the problems that exist in our society today. Again, this is at a time when you're trying to develop your self-image. This is child abuse, quite frankly. And if that's not enough, you may not be a girl or a boy. So I mean, I just think what we're doing to these children is abominable. I think, you know, when history is written, and people look back on this period, they'll say, what in the world were those people thinking? But the good thing is right now, there are a number of people who are speaking out against this. Next week, the Fight for Freedom and 1776 Action are sponsoring a town hall in which there will be hundreds of people, speakers. I will be there as well. Talking about this, and I'm so proud of the parents who have stood up for what is right here, because what those who want to fundamentally change our country anticipate is that people will just stay in the corner and put their head down and nobody calls them a name. That doesn't work. You cannot be the land of the free if you're not the home of the brave.
Such a great point, sir. You know, if this is the agenda of the left, certainly the far left in education, Republicans are going to need to have a philosophy to counter it with. And so before the Trump administration left, it began to develop the 1776 curriculum. You have always talked about empowerment and that the next generation should always have the opportunity to be better than the last generation, handing up success through generation. It's the opposite, literally the antithesis of critical race theory. Can you tell us whether conservatives you think have the right message to not only defeat the CRT, but to create a pathway of empowerment for our young children?
Well, you know, the right things have always been there. There have been people who've come along and tried to hijack the system. That's the problem. Yeah. And but I do think that not necessarily conservatives, but logical people need to be a little more forceful and presenting the truth. You know, for instance, the 1619 Project is trying to center everything around slavery and make people think that there's something unique about America and something uniquely evil because we had slavery. Now, if you really want the true history, you have to recognize that slavery has been a part of society since there have been recorded history. And that there are actually more slaves right now in America than there were in 1863. Sexual slaves, that trafficking is horrendous, what's going on and what it's doing to people's lives. And the only thing that's really unique about America is that we were willing to fight a civil war and lose a substantial portion of our population to stop it. There were people who said it's abominable. We simply cannot do that. And, you know, some people say, well, the Civil War wasn't really fought about that. It was to prevent secession. Why do you think they wanted to succeed? Wow. You know, people have to be realistic about this. And, you know, there's so much good that we can teach our children. You know, that's one of the things that we're doing with American Cornerstone. We have our little Patriots program, a new book coming out very shortly. And it's teaching the real history of America, warts and all. We don't want to hide the warts. But we want to teach the true history, and people will be very proud to be Americans. And you cannot have a successful nation when the people are ashamed of their country.
Yeah, that's exactly so true. And part of the goal of this is to make people feel ashamed about America. You can see it in the writings and the advocates. I want to ask you, I've talked to a lot of parents over the last month. We've had some on the show today. And one of the things they say is that they're seeing a new form of racism crop up in America. And some of it is your skin determines your outcome. You're either an oppressor or the oppressed. Another part of it is we see, like in the case in Atlanta recently, where a young black student was told she had to go to the black class. She couldn't go to the white class. There's this segregation, identity segregation of classrooms. How should we go about fighting that? What are the best efforts at stopping those sort of experiments?
Well, for one thing, I think we ought to talk about the progress that's been made. Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, it was a big deal when a black person came on television in a non-servile role. Everybody came to see it. It was cool. Is that the case anymore? Of course not. Now we have black admirals and generals and CEOs of Fortune 500 companies and presidents of Ivy League universities. The president of the United States has been black, the vice That's president right. now. You know, I mean, to say that we're not making progress is absolutely ostrich-like, sticking your head in the hole. And, you know, we need to be upfront about that. We need to talk about it. Don't let somebody else carry the narrative. Let's talk about what's actually happening. And, you know, people can see that we've made enormous progress. We ought to be very proud of that. Doesn't mean we need to stop at that point. Right. We need to continue. But we also need to emphasize the fact that Dr. Martin Luther King was absolutely right. We want a society in which we judge people not on the color of their skin, but the content of their character. Do you know anybody who can control the color of their skin?
No.
But everybody can control the content of their character. And that's what we should be judging people on. And also recognize that people have these big frontal lobes so that they can analyze.
Right.
You know, and animals don't have big frontal lobes. They can't analyze anything. They can just react. They have big midbrains, which is for reacting.
Right.
Why should we act like animals? We can do so much better than that.
No, such a great point. Dr. Carson, I want to thank you so much for all you've done and also for sharing the wisdom today. You're right. We have so much to look forward to in progress. We got to stop looking backwards. Forward seems to be the way to go.
Absolutely. All right, John. So good to be with you. Thank you.
You too, sir. Thank you so much. All right, folks, that wraps up our show today. I hope you enjoyed the dialogue we've had. We heard from parents who said, listen, I don't want skin color to be determinant taught to my child about what their future is going to be. We heard from members of Congress that we're going to keep this out of the military and out of federal programming and spending. We heard from everyday folks about what is going on in the school boards, activating parents, bringing people to run for election who had never thought of running for election before in their lives. This CRT, this critical race theory, is a singular big event in America. It is taking hold, and it is likely to create a reaction that will long shape American education. We hope you've enjoyed tonight. We certainly have. We thank all of our guests, and we ask that God bless you and this great country, the United States of America.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right, folks, wraps it up for Labor Day. I hope you've had a blessed weekend, a great holiday. You grilled a few of those Kansas City steaks, and you're on your way to a wonderful, wonderful start of the fall. Yes, it gets busy. A lot of coming up, 9/11, the California recall, the Virginia election, just a few of the many things, not to mention the ongoing crisis in Afghanistan. May God bless you, and may God bless this extraordinary country, the United States, as he always has. You've been listening to John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.